This week, James M. Landis returned to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Sort of. Mr. Landis is one of the original New Dealers. He wrote the charter of the SEC, back when this country was reeling from depression and teetering on the verge of bankruptcy. Many policies James Landis helped create still impose structure on the way business operates in the United States. He was the youngest dean of the Harvard Law School, an advisor to both Joseph P. Kennedy, the first head of the SEC, and his son John, who of course became president. But James Landis's career in public life was cut short by a bizarre personal lapse. This week, the SEC installed a bust of James L. Landis in its Washington, D.C. headquarters as part of the commission's 70th anniversary celebrations. Donald Ritchie is the deputy Senate historian and a biographer of James Landis. He spoke this week at the installation ceremonies and joins us in our studios. Thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
Tell us about James Landis. He was reported to be so brilliant that he was the dean of the Harvard Law School and without passing the bar.
That's true. He graduated from Harvard Law School at the top of his class, and he was immediately went off to become a Supreme Court clerk to Justice Louis Brandeis, mm-hmm. and then was hired back to teach at Harvard. And in fact, at the age of 48, realized that he had never taken a bar exam, and so he went back and took a refresher course with all of the green graduates from the law schools, and because he was quite afraid that he might fail, and then the newspapers would write about the dean of the Harvard Law School failing the bar exams.
Yeah.
But when he got the exam, the very first question was about a law that he had written. And he thought he was okay at that point.
Remind us how the Securities and Exchange Act changed American business.
Well, the great crisis, of course, was the stock market crash of 1929. Between 1929 and 1932, the stock market fell by something like 85%. Mm-hmm. And in the 30s, there were a lot of people who were arguing that we should nationalize the financial system. We should have state banks, and mm-hmm. The government should take over, as it was in many other countries. The New Deal was looking for a middle way between unregulated capitalism and between nationalism, socialism. And the people like James Landis proposed regulatory commissions that would try to adjudicate issues on a case-by-case basis. And that's essentially what they created in 1934 with the Securities mm-hmm. Exchange Commission. And much of the whole federal regulatory process that still stands, despite two decades of deregulation, we still have the agencies that he helped to create and the laws that he helped to write.
Tell us about his relationship with Joseph Kennedy.
They were a very odd couple. Landis was a very short, slight, soft-spoken, rumpled academic type, and Joe Kennedy was a tall, robust, athletic, outgoing, wisecracking fellow. And the two of them realized that they had strengths that the other one didn't. Kennedy admired Landis's intellect, and he turned over most of the actual management of the SEC to Landis. Landis admired Kennedy's personality and self-confidence, and he became sort of the outreach person, going up to Wall Street to convince the exchanges and the brokers to cooperate with this new law that they were fighting tooth and nail at the time.
And then we get to this question. How is it that a man who not only knew the law, helped draft the law by which we live in this country and by which business is conducted, how could he wind up besmirching his reputation and really putting his life in a bad way by something as indecorous and mundane as not filing his income taxes for 5 years?
That was a very sad episode in his life. In 1960, he was one of the first people that John F. Kennedy appointed to his new administration. But while they were doing a routine check at the White House, they discovered he hadn't paid his income taxes for 5 years. And he had to resign as special assistant. He eventually was prosecuted. He was sent to jail for 30 days. Ironically, he had been Bobby Kennedy's advisor in setting up the Justice Department when Kennedy became Attorney General. And it was Kennedy's Justice Department that prosecuted him. They felt that just because he was a friend of the family, they couldn't let him go. I talked to the attorneys who prosecuted him, and they said, you know, it wasn't an effort to cheat. If you wanted to cheat, you would have filed fraudulent income tax returns. He was a classic definition of a workaholic, I suppose, and perhaps there's a sense of wanting to be stopped that comes with this.
And he died shortly thereafter.
Yes, he drowned in the swimming pool of his home. The New York Times
obituary. People must have thought it was suicide.
Most of the newspapers even implied that it was suicide. I was a researcher. I was able to get his autopsy report, and I discovered that he suffered a seizure while he was swimming. By that point, Joseph Kennedy had suffered a stroke and was not able to go to Landis's funeral, but Robert Kennedy came and represented the family. John Kennedy, of course, had been assassinated by then as well. And Robert Kennedy sat in the funeral and visibly wept over the death of this man who was so intertwined with his family and who they really were not able to protect.
Donald Ritchie is the deputy Senate historian and biographer of James Landis. His book is called James M. Landis, Dean of the Regulators. Mr. Ritchie, thanks very much.
I'm glad to be here.